Everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm a tired person right now. This is David Johnson, we joined by Mac McIntyre.
I can do.
And Eric Astersleger.
Hello.
And I'm just barely keeping it together because we brought our daughter to Storyland, which is kind of New Hampshire's little family getaway park that everyone has to. I think when you move to the region, you sign some kind of form that says you have to go visit it. So we thought we would take Bridget to go see it. She's two. That means she gets in free, so what about... She won't remember. She's not going to remember anything older, but it makes for some good Facebook photos. So I am I'm pretty much torched, so I'm going to lean heavily on you guys. So Mac, why don't you start us off?
So are you guys still excited to see Dark Knight?
No.
I guess.
I was at the toy store, and all the action figures are out now. They've been out for a while, and I was checking out all the different action figures from the movie.
There's all spoiler ones, right? I mean, I don't know anything about the movie. I've kept pretty clean, but
right.
You know, we were talking about soundtracks, right? So I don't want to say, like, Corp Batman action figure.
So keep it clean, Mac.
Well, that's my question, is how much of this stuff is actually going to be in the movie? Because some of these action figures are just really out there. There's a scuba Batman. There's a desert survival Batman.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Where he's like in his, like, you know, the sort of brown and gray khakis like the guys in Iraq wear.
I don't know, Mac. I mean, I think you wait. These are going to be major story spoilers here.
That's right. Like when he goes scuba diving in Dubai, right?
That's possible.
So, Mac, speaking of action figures, real quick. Did you ever buy Star Wars action figures? Do you have a Star Wars action figure collection? Because if any action figure line really just kind of stretched it out and, you know, gave even the most, you know, most background character in action figure was Star Wars.
Yes, I have a considerable Star Wars action figure.
So do you have any of, like, you know, like the Porkins action figure or anything like that, you know?
I don't buy just every single one just because it's Star Wars. I have little rules that I follow.
But they exist, though, correct?
I mean, yes, there is a Porkins action figure.
Yeah, so they've got some pretty lame action figures. So, like, a lot of grandchildren have probably been disappointed by dumb grandparents. So
I only buy them from the era of the movie, right? Porkins came out in, like, 95 when there was no Star Wars movies.
Oh,
lame. So you think,
yeah. And that's when they came up with the super muscular Luke and Han.
Those are so lame.
Yeah, with the huge bulging biceps. Yeah. Those are awful.
Yeah, you're right. They, it only works when you get them, era specific. You're right.
It's like
right.
Venom Han Solo, Venom Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, like, oh, Porkins has caught on, you know. There's a cult following to Porkins. That's really, you know, even a...
I bet, you know, there has to be a Porkins Tumblr out there.
Oh, there must be, yeah.
Or like the Burger King commemorative Star Wars glass with Perkins on it. Oh, man. Yeah, I have actually, I think I broke, unfortunately, but I had gotten, Eric, you may have been with me when I purchased the Burger King Star Wars glass. From someone at a yard sale, like talking about.
Yeah, I think I got one too, or maybe it was a different place. But I used to have the same Jabba's Palace glass I had when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, like pretty bad. You know, I believe it was like Luke Skywalker uses his laser sword to fight someone. I don't know who wrote the copy, but I'm guessing they should never watch Star Wars.
Those are serious collectibles, you guys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I think mine broke, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what happened to a lot of people. That's why they're so rare.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Dark Knight action figures. Another one is Batman all dressed in bright red, and it's called the Batarang Bash Batman. It's like, is that going to be in the movie?
That's probably going to be from the Prince music video.
Oh, yes.
At the end of the movie. Sorry, spoilers.
The other thing I love, I don't know if they've ever done this before or not. They must have, but I've never actually seen one. They made an Alfred action figure.
Yeah, what's his action?
He holds a little tray with, like, glasses on it.
Nice. What exciting scenes can you reenact with that?
I don't know. It's a Michael Caine action figure, so you could do Harry Brown.
That's a good point.
That's true.
Whatever.
Metallica job, yeah.
Yeah, that Graham Greene
The stupid version of Sherlock Holmes.
No, without a clue.
That's right. That is true. That's a good way to look at it. Way to put it.
You get your Christopher Reeve Superman action figure, and you can do Death Trap.
Nice.
Oh, man. Well, I guess, do these Batman action figures, like, you take the masks, you know, can you demask him So you got a Bruce Wayne as a bonus, or you're just kind of stuck with it, probably?
I actually didn't buy any today. I was
That's a shame.
So in some you can, but in some you can't. I think the bigger ones you might be able to, but the smaller ones, probably the mask doesn't come off.
All right. Well, nice. What else you got? Anything else cooking?
They came out with there's a Batmobile figure, and it actually says Batmobile on the package, because I was so ticked off when Batman Begins came out and all the Batmobile toys on the package it said the Tumbler.
Right.
Yeah, plus we've got to call it the Batmobile.
Okay, quick lightning round ambush topic. Favorite Batmobile from the small screen or big screen? Mac.
Oh, I really like the one from the first Tim Burton movie.
All right, the elongated one.
Yeah, that one's. I've got the little Hot Wheels version over there.
The right on the bookshelf.
I can see it from here.
All right, Eric.
I don't know. I'll be contrarian and go with the '60s Adam West Batmobile.
You love the siren. Right?
Siren's great.
That's a good one. It's got so many gadgets.
Yeah, it's got that sort of like bra windshield thing going
That's
on.
True.
It's great.
My favorite superfluous gadget on that was they were taking off to chase a bad guy. They were on a golf course. And instead of firing up, you know, the rocket booster, Batman warned, we don't want to burn the grounds, you know? So I can't remember how they did it, but they did some kind of magic spinning, like, something probably similar to the Bat. Was it in the Burton? No, it was in the Batman Returns, right? Where like it pivoted on some kind of swivel. Remember, like
right,
set a clown on fire.
The bottom and did a 180. Yeah.
Tim Burton. Tim Burton. This. I'm going to go with you, Mac. I definitely love that. I definitely love the first Batman one. The Batman and Robin Batmobile was just out of control.
Right, with all of the lights and the spinning and everything.
That was out of control. But. All right, very good. Eric, what about you?
Well, I'll keep it on the Batman tip for a moment here. I'm a good portion of the way through Nightfall right now.
The comic book?
Yep. I got the Volume 1 collection, and I've made it past the actual, you know, the climax, the Bane Batman climax. So, just kind of wrapping some things up. Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it feels older than I assumed it would. I mean, this came out in 93, so it was after I had stopped really reading comics on a monthly basis. Mm. But like going back now, reading it and looking at the art and all that stuff, based, you know, compared to what they have now, it feels like it was made in the 60s.
Oh yeah,
and it's obviously it's a very different like take on Batman. It still has like the blue and the gray suit, and you know,
even with Azrael and all that stuff.
Well, Azrael hasn't really gotten into the story that I'm reading right now.
Okay.
He's around, but he doesn't have the whole.
Okay,
that's later, I guess. But
yeah. That's true. That's like Night Quest or something like that.
Yeah, okay. But you know, and the whole kind of thrust of this Nightfall storyline at the beginning is that Bane breaks all the guys out of Arkham. So he's taking on all these different Arkham, you know, all these different villains. And, you know, some of them, you have the Joker and the Scarecrow and the Riddler and Poison Ivy and all the kind of the core, semi-serious villains. And then you've got someone named Film Freak who apparently is an older villain who would like quote lines from movies as he committed crimes, and he's got earrings that look like film canisters. That's how you can tell
what?
That he's Film Freak. He's like a bald guy with the film canister earrings, and that's and there's like Ventriloquist and Mad Hatter and someone named Firefly who just sets fire. So it's a lot of it's a mix. I mean, the story comes together, but it's definitely villains you would not see in
actually I think Firefly was one of those like collectibles from Arkham City, the Batman Arkham City.
I mean, makes sense. I mean, you know, at least he sets fire. Setting legal fires isn't cool, but at least fire is kind of.
Yeah, right.
he's a mad arsonist. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. He's obsessed with fire. He fights Batgirl a lot. He's a rival to Batgirl Batman.
That seems about right. I mean, you know, hey, the tagline for Dark Knight Rises is what? Fire rises?
That's
he could be in it. I don't know.
He might be in it. That's right.
Might.
I've kept myself away from anything resembling that.
Right. So I'm enjoying that. Actually, keeping it on the fire tip. Boy, we're flowing all together. You know, Dave, I don't think we've talked about Burning Love at all on the show.
We mentioned it briefly, right?
Did we? Okay, maybe it's before I started watching. But yeah, I've watched all but the last episode.
This same here. The tell-all, the post.
Yeah. So this
is ballerina shocker.
Exactly. This is the Camerino, Bachelor.
Yeah, Bachelor.
Parody okay. thing. It's so funny. It's really great. You can check it out. Burninglove.com. Each episode's like 8 to 10
minutes. I don't think you could get it through Yahoo. Interesting.
Okay. I think that goes to Yahoo, but that's
okay.
That's the URL.
Nice.
Yeah, you know that my favorite thing about the whole series, and it's such a weird touch, is they got the music just right.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
like, the music cues are so like reality show perfect.
Yeah,
that I laugh every time they start.
A lot of good guest stars: Carrie Kenny from episode 12.
Carrie Kenny, Kristen Bell, Jennifer Aniston, right. Carla Gallo's, a ton of people in it.
Ben, Adam Scott.
Yeah. No, Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller, that's right, Ben Stiller. So I was thinking Adam Scott. So yeah, pretty funny. So yeah, Michael Ian Black obviously is.
Yeah. So right now you could go and watch the whole run.
Yeah, recommended. I wonder, is that something that would get released on like a DVD or a Blu-ray, a la Dr. Horrible, you know?
That's possible. I guess I don't know who owns the rights to that stuff. Because you have like 13 episodes, and each one's, you know, probably averages 7 minutes. So I'm not going to do the math, but that seems like a pretty good – that's almost feature length.
Yeah, well, regardless, Eric is right. It's very funny, so definitely check it out and just spool it up and go on a marathon.
Yeah, so that's all I got.
And I got next to nothing. It's just – Friday at 11, I know where I'm going to be. I got my parents coming in to babysit. My dad, my mom, and my dad, my wife, and myself are going to head to Merrimack and watch Batman.
So this Friday, this is 11 in the morning?
Yeah, 11 in the morning.
Okay.
And Mac, you're welcome to join us, unless you're working, and you're probably working. So, but you're welcome to join us in Merrimack if you want.
Okay.
So
can either of you really, I mean, Mac may be doing this, but I can't imagine going to a midnight show over three hours.
Yeah, never. No. I've never gone. The only time, the closest was in college. We used to go to those really late shows in crappy cheap theaters, and that was kind of taking your life in your own hands. So would come in there in all manner of disrepair and ill repute. But yeah, no, I couldn't do that. And plus the whole crowd thing. I think I have a better shot at 11 o'clock in a theater that won't be as packed. So yeah, I guess I'm elitist when I come to sit down and watch and plug into a movie.
Now is this gonna be IMAX for you?
No, but that might be another. I just need to get out of the way right now. I just need to. You know what I mean?
You gotta rip off that Band-Aid.
Absolutely. It just needs to happen, and then maybe on a second viewing, which sounds like it's one of those movies that would mandate a second viewing. Maybe I'll script.
I think I've kind of come to the conclusion that any Nolan movie requires a second viewing.
That's true. I think that's accurate.
Just to understand what's going on.
So yeah, so that's what I'm doing, and that's all I've got. So I've got nothing. And then the recent revelation I came to that I think Superman 2, which I've always loved, in reality sucks. So that was kind of.
It took you a long time. You wrote a post forever ago. You wrote a diversionary landslide about the crappiness.
That's
of the
true. Superman yeah, suit. Thanks for that. Yeah, that's right. But that was just kind of talking about the weird powers, always coming from a loving side of it. But for some reason, I was just rewatching it, and it's like, man, this sucks. I mean, just
painful.
It's brutal. I don't know. Maybe a heresy, Mac? Am I speaking heresy?
Well, you know, the alternate version has come out. The Richard Donner's preferred version.
I haven't watched that. So I'll speak. Maybe I'll hold my tongue before.
You should watch that. It's really interesting to see how they compare and contrast.
Okay, I would like to see that. I mean, I don't know if Lois comes out in a better light, but she's not. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember. I own that version, but I can't remember if all that like Lois.
Yeah, she comes across kind of not the most selfless person. And I was like,
it's a gray area, it's a gray area. But I think you could make the case that she does.
Okay, all right, that's good. She's got, as far as I'm concerned, Lois Lane has a lot of orphan blood on her hands. That's where I'm at. Man, that was what else? I was watching something and. Because that was obviously when they were doing the transition from Donner to Lester. Is that who the guy? Richard Lester or something Lester. I don't know.
Yeah, Richard Lester.
And he started like adding the camp element. There was something so campy in this one. Maybe it was a guy on roller skates getting blown backwards by Zod and the crew. I don't know.
All the stuff with the super breath blowing through. That was all Lester, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That was, oh, the guy in the phone. I don't know. The guy
with the ice cream cone.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, although we shouldn't be too hard on Richard Lester. He did direct A Hard Day's Night, so.
Okay. And he also directed Man 3, too, right?
So really, it's kind of hit or miss. He's sort of the Francis Ford Coppola of movies, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Of what?
Francis Ford Coppola movies. There's a Francis Ford Coppola.
Because Francis Ford Coppola is the Francis Ford Coppola of winemakers.
Like the Michael Jordan of basketball. Okay, let's move on. Let's see what other delightful metaphors reveal themselves. Stuff we got cooking for the site, Mac.
All right. Stuff for the site. I got another Doctor Who release here. Doctor Who Resurrection of the Daleks from 1984, featuring the fifth Doctor. It's pretty good. It's Doctor versus the Daleks. This is why we love the show. The Daleks have traveled through time to rescue their creator, Davros, from suspended animation. And Davros is, of course, total evil. And there's a scene that's been really controversial among fans where the Doctor picks up a gun and he announces that he intends to kill Davros, which is, like, totally, you know, not what the Doctor's about. And the fans always say, oh, it's the episode where the Doctor goes Rambo. Well, no, the Doctor does not go Rambo. He's just pushed to extremes.
Really, I mean, the only thing that's controversial, though, is the gun. I mean, Doctor Who kills things. He's responsible for all kinds of deaths. It's kind of his deal, right?
Exactly. I guess they're just fans aren't used to him walking around with a gun and talking about killing people. So
that makes sense.
But it's a really good episode. You know, there's a lot of craziness and goofiness like these old episodes that they have that has a really sort of solid dramatic ending to it as well. So I really enjoyed it. And just tons and tons and tons of bonus features. It's just taking me forever to go through.
Very nice. Eric?
I'm reviewing a movie I had never heard of before it hit the product list. It's called Holy Flying Circus. And It's a BBC-made... Boy, it's almost a biopic. It's almost like a dramatic reenactment, except it's not at all. It's more of a comedic reenactment of... the controversy surrounding Monty Python's Life of Brian when it came out in England. But it's made in a way where it's sort of made as though it were a Monty Python film about the controversy. So you have all of the...
Is it too clever for its own good?
No, I think it works. I think it's not quite up to the level of Monty Python, of course, but you have, you know, all of these actors and comedians who portraying the Python members, and they're dead-on impersonations, and you can tell just by looking at them who they're supposed to be. So you have that aspect. I think if it was just that, it would be fine, but maybe you know, like I said, a little too kind of clever, a little too kind of an uncanny valley situation. But what they do is they mix in, like, Python-esque, like, scrolling text, like, you know, jokes in the opening credits. They put in animated sequences, you know, that aren't as good as what Terry Gilliam used to do, but you know, they add their own humor. It's presented in such a way that they're like fantasy sequences. They even go so far, like, to kind of get it in the Monty Python mode, where the guy who plays Michael Palin, his wife, is played by the guy playing Terry Jones playing Michael Palin's wife.
What?
as Terry Jones playing Michael Palin's wife. It's not like it's the same actor just pretending to be a woman. It's him with Terry Jones' accent pretending to be Michael Palin's wife. It's bizarre, but I thought it was really well done. I think it's definitely worth checking out.
And especially if you're a Python fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't say you have to be, because there are kind of larger, you know, it's about censorship. It's about, you know, what's permissible in comedy. It's about a lot of things that we still talk about today. Although it is totally, it's very strange to kind of encounter, you know, what was this, you know, religious taboo in Britain in the 70s. And in fact, the Life of Brian was banned on British TV, like, I think, until 95.
Really?
So you have this whole like religious, you know, taboo. Whereas, you know, at the same time, you know, sex, swearing, nudity, totally fine. Actually, today I watched, went on YouTube and watched the debate that John Cleese and Michael Palin had with a bishop and another prominent figure who argued on the side of the church from the time. And the movie all kind of builds up to a recreation, partial recreation of this talk show debate. And in the actual footage of the 70s talk show, they show a clip from the movie where Terry Jones is naked. So even then, it wasn't like that kind of stuff wasn't an issue, which is so strange, I think, to kind of an American audience to realize. Or even, you know, down to this film being made today and just being chalk. I mean, it's full of, you know, swear words that you'll never hear on American television, at least for the next 15 years. So it's interesting just kind of where different cultures draw the lines. But anyway,
Sounds worthwhile. Excellent. Yeah. I got nothing quite as interesting as that. I'll just one quick note. I'm not sure if this is posted on the site yet, or it should be soon. A Japanese movie called Quill. It's actually a family-friendly Japanese movie. I was really expecting tentacle rape to show up at any point here, but luckily we were spared. And it tracks the life of a guide dog, right? So, you know, it's real low-key, real family-friendly. That guide dog's relationship with his blind master there. But notable for the use of CGI, spoiler alert, okay? The use of CGI to render a dog dropping dead.
Yikes.
Yeah, very odd. And they really, when they say they look at the whole life, they look at the whole life. So your kid, if he's a dog lover or just a little bit sensitive and makes it through the subtitle reading, he's got a lot of waterworks ahead of him, because they give you the dog suckling on his mom to a slow death with his owners crying over him. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, there's no zoom out fade or anything like that. You're getting it all, buddy. So.
Now, Dave, would you describe this as like the Old Yeller of movies?
It is the Old Yeller of movies. Okay. And that's an accurate description. And you know, another accurate description of our next segment from Mac would be what?
That would be looking at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray.
We're just all about segues this episode.
Yeah, I know. We're with it. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com. We're going to click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. From there, we're going to scroll down to the cover art gallery for July 24th, and you listening home can play along. Just going to talk about whatever's on the list here.
Well, that's some interesting stuff. The series Boss, which I would like to watch it at some point. I don't know if I'll ever get around to it, but I've heard great things about that.
Got the Blu-ray release of Star Trek Next Generation Season 1.
Right. A lot of folks looking forward to that.
Yeah, Mac, you reviewed sort of their preview disc of just a few episodes that showed
the sample disc, yeah. It looked really good on the Blu-ray. You could see a lot of little details in the Enterprise that I never noticed before.
And they actually went in and kind of restored and recreated special effects and all that kind of stuff.
Well, they say they haven't redone the special effects. The official word from the studio is that it's taken from the original elements, and so this is how it's always been meant to be seen. So, but a lot of people are online are saying, no, they CGI this, they CGI that. So it's up to you whether you want to believe.
So they're pulling a George Lucas?
They say they're not pulling a George Lucas, but the fans say they are pulling a George Lucas. Uh-huh.
Did I see here? Did you ever watch Sliders?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if I ever got into it as much as I probably should have, but.
That was right in the mid-90s when the X-Files was at the peak of its popularity and every sci-fi show just had to be dark, 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 dark. Yeah. And then along came Sliders, and Sliders was light and it was funny, and it was the only sci-fi show that was doing light and funny at that time.
And then it became an Applebee's appetizer.
That's right.
And how about the Superman versus the Elite? What are we looking at there, Mac? Do you have an idea? Sorry.
Yeah, that's another.
Did we talk about this one already? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
Okay.
That's another DC Universe directed DVD animated feature. Not too familiar with the story. I believe it has something to do with the aliens coming down to Earth saying that they're going to do what Superman doesn't. They're going to solve all of humanity's problems for us, right?
Oh, okay.
And Superman doesn't like that. And I would assume that they probably are up to no good and Superman stops them. That's my guess as to where the story goes.
Gotcha.
And Superman's cape is really long on that cover.
It does look pretty long, yeah.
Covers the whole bottom of the picture.
We've got a couple, looks like, I guess, a couple horror releases that feature disembodied body part. We got the Werewolf Fever down the bottom, which is like a roller skating foot that's been cut off. Legs
that's
cut
amazing.
Off.
Yeah, I wonder if that movie is as cool as that cover art.
Probably not. And then further up, we have Dead Time.
Yeah,
which is an arm coming out of a guitar. Now talk about too clever for its own good. Heads will rock and roll.
Yeah, good.
And, British, bloody and brutal.
Oh, gee.
A little bit thing going on there.
That's rough. Watch some Beatles stuff there, Eric. Anything grab you there?
No, everything kind of smacks of unauthorized.
Yeah.
We talked to the Beatles hairdresser's granddaughter, and she recalls.
Yeah. All right. So an assortment of stuff here. Actually, that movie next to The Boss, Break, with Stephen Dorff. I've got that on my dock here. Yeah. I remember hearing a little bit about it, so I'm looking forward to checking it out. So, okay, but that's all that. So, inadvertently, Susie Sonic DVD release of the week. Mac.
Joint Body.
Good. Eric?
I'm going to go with On the Inside.
And not bad. I'll go with And Then Came Summer.
Ah, good. You got the other one I was going to choose.
Okay, ambush topics. Well, you know how this works, so we'll get right to it. I'll go first, considering my experience today at Storyland, an amusement park based on a movie or a TV show, as you like, and what those attractions would be.
So, okay, so it's a fictional.
Like making
absolutely.
Oh, okay. Phew.
Something, yeah, a fictional one that you would go and visit. How about that? And you got a free coupon, like, in the penny sink. So you don't.
Let's see. If I can come up with something for community.
Okay.
Land.
Community land. All right.
Signor Chang's Wild Ride, probably.
Paintball, of course.
Yeah, paintball. That's good. Yeah. Jeff's Texting Adventure.
Well, and definitely the help me out. Their little holodeck they have in their apartment.
Dreamatorium.
Yeah.
Have that. Jeff's Texting Adventure. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, the Harman coaster that goes up and up and up and then just goes straight down and crashes.
Yeah.
And everyone dies.
Subways everywhere as far as
it just ends at a brick wall and that's it.
This is a tricky one.
While you're thinking, I'll go with just kind of follow suit. Eric, we'll go to the Arrested Development theme park. And I think obviously the possibilities are endless. In fact, there are actual rides in the show. Right, the I keep forgetting, like, the Tunnel of Hell, Indubitably, right? One of my favorites there.
Of course, there would be magic shows.
Magic shows all over the place, a little trip through Tiny Town.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's good.
Whack-a-mole or fighting.
Yeah, yeah, say, the whack-a-mole.
That's right, whack-a-mole. So, yeah, so banana stands as well. You know, yeah, definitely. There's a banana. You'll have live music from Mother Boy.
Yeah. Now, would you include like a little Britain section or Wee Britain? I'm sorry,
some Wee Britain and Bluthton. I'll burn it to the ground if I have. yeah, so
you have a whole kind of Iraq section.
That's right, whole Iraq.
Where everyone a lot of different Saddam Hussein impersonators wandering around.
And then, you know, to cool off, you can use a club pool, providing you're a member.
how would Franklin tie into it?
Well, Franklin, that's true.
Well, he'd be like the mascot, you know, like Mickey Mouse in Disney.
So you have like a Franklin walking around. It ain't easy. Yeah. Judge Reinhold's legal officer or something. Well, that's a whole filibuster. So go ahead.
Spinoff podcast where we just come up with
lots of attractions for the Arrested Development theme park, right? Special exclusive screening of Jane Junk. Called my homeless dad. All All right, Mac. Yeah.
All right. Maybe this. Okay, I'll go a little abstract, and let's just do the theme park that's based on Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. So you've got the Predator jungle that you can walk through, and get shot at and stuff.
It's really humid and terrifying.
Right. And then from there you go straight into the Terminator 2 steel mill. There's a ride that goes through there.
It's good.
And
you can ride an overturning liquid nitrogen truck into the steel mill too.
There you go. Yeah. And
how about inspired by Commando? They fly you up in a 747 and you just jump out.
Drop you right off
the just drop you over a swamp.
Did you have the coaster recall?
Nice.
Or maybe the total roller coaster. One of the two. I'm not really sure which one.
Nice. What would it be called, though?
That's a good one. Let's see.
Arnoldton?
Arnoldton. Doesn't quite have a ring.
Doesn't roll off your tongue. Okay.
The Terminator Porium? No, that's terrible.
I'll think about it and get back to us.
Okay.
In the meanwhile, let's move on to Eric. Who do you got?
All right. This wasn't inspired by Bane in the comic books, but I think it applies. Near invulnerable foes.
Probably the only way to defeat them would be some, like, obscure plot device, I would guess.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just going off of that. One of my favorite kind of plot devices was in the last season of Buffy, and Nathan Fillion's character, what was his name? Help me out, Mac.
Caleb,
this kind of unstoppable preacher, you know, deranged preacher who was infested by the first evil. So really unstoppable, plucked out Xander's eye, like no one could do anything. But thankfully, there was a very special, some bladed weapon hidden underneath the cavern somewhere, right?
Right.
Like a perfect plot device for Buffy, and she cleaved him in twain with it. But up until that point, he was, you know, he's pretty ruthless. And in fact, I have a bonus one too. Another Firefly alum who showed up in a Whedon show as an invulnerable foe, and that was, and I'm sucking on names, but in Angel season 4, as Jasmine.
What
was her name?
Oh, no, I can't think of her name either.
Yeah, she's in everything, too. So.
She played Zoe on
Firefly. Yeah, she played Zoe in Firefly, and I can't believe I can't remember her name. But,
oh, man.
Yeah, she was...
Everyone listening is just screaming at their computer.
I know, we suck. Our geek barometer is descending now. But yeah, and her, the plot device to kill her was Angel had to decapitate some guy in another dimension, and with the guy's head's dying breath, say her real name, and that's what killed her, or something like
Gina
that.
Gina Torres.
Good call. Of course, Gina Torres. So, yeah, so two Firefly, unemployed Firefly cast members got some part-time work as true badasses who were nigh invulnerable.
All right. Oh, is it a me or is it
no,
Mac?
It's
no,
a, gotta go with Chucky in Child's Play 2.
Yeah, that guy was not great one.
Right, there's the big finale in the toy factory, and
not go down.
He just keeps taking beating after beating after beating, and he keeps getting more and more messed up, and he keeps coming back over and over and over. That finale just goes on and on and on.
It does. Like to the point where he literally explodes, but then just a little piece of him falls into a vat, and he gets reborn.
Right.
So, I don't. That's an unfair voodoo advantage, I think.
Unfair Voodoo Advantage would be a pretty good band name.
It would be. UVA! UVA!
Alright, okay, so it's up to me. Alright, this is, inspired by, I watched a movie this week on Netflix, one of my random Netflix choices. 2011 movie called The Caller, which is sort of a, you know, horror thriller. It's not great, so I'm willing to spoil it if you guys don't mind. At least spoil on the premise. Do you mind?
Spoil away.
So the premise of The Caller is there is this young woman who's moved into a new apartment. In the apartment there is a telephone, an old telephone. It rings randomly. She picks it up. It's a woman who is confused. She seems to have the wrong apartment. She keeps calling back. Eventually they realize she is calling from the past. She is in 1979 or something, and this woman's in the future. And it turns out the woman from the past is a psychopath. And she does not like being, you know, when the woman from the future cuts her off, she goes all, you know, psycho on her. And she begins targeting the younger versions of herself, of the woman, the young woman and her mother and the people she knows. And she actually starts like killing off people in the past so they never existed in the future. Seems like, how do you take out someone who lived 30 years before and can basically destroy you, kill you, yeah. So you never even existed?
I don't know.
The answer is, a plot device that, okay. Yeah. You want me to tell you?
Yeah, spoiler.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So she goes this whole thing. She ends up like, not kidnapping, but getting the young version of this girl to come to her house. She like burns her with hot fat at one point, and all of a sudden in the present, she's got all these burns on her body. And then she's going to kill her. She's already killed off like the guy she likes, and she's killed off all these people who no longer exist. And so she has the girl back in her house, the young girl. And the modern girl, talking to herself as a child on the phone, coaches her young self through how to murder this woman with like a mirror shard or something. And she's like, you have to do it. Meanwhile, the woman is in the present now. She's like the older version of herself is in the present, and she comes to the apartment where the woman in the present lives, and she's going to kill her. And just as she's about to kill her with the knife, the girl in the past kills the woman in the past, so she didn't exist in the future.
Craziness.
So does the word paradox even use at all in the script?
Yeah, there's one point. Okay. They make token mention of all that kind of stuff. It's kind of like I mentioned the movie Skeleton Key a while back. It's one of those movies that has an okay premise. I mean, that's not a bad idea for a movie if you're going to do it well. It should be better if it's like a Twilight Zone episode or a Tales from the Crypt episode, something where you don't have to stretch it out for.
Actually, it's a little familiar of a catalog Blu-ray I reviewed for the site. Do you remember Frequency with Caviezel, Jim Caviezel, and Dennis Quaid?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of kind of that time travel and stuff that's happening in the past affects. It kind of like a multi-dimensional fight with a bad guy. But
that's true, really? Yeah.
Earlier
today, I watched Deja Vu with Denzel Washington.
Look at that. Wow.
Had, like a time travel thing, too.
That's freaky.
Or so you just wait until in Dark Knight Rises, they're going to call from the past. It's going to be Adam West. And
that's right. That's the twist. Oh.
I got Bane in the past. What are you?
That's the twist. Refresh my memory, Nightfall.
I'm scuba diving. Oh, refresh. What's that?
Nightfall. Like, sure. How unstoppable supposedly is Bane in Nightfall?
Well, it seems like the deal, and I can't tell from what I'm reading how this starts, but Batman is like really worn down. He can't sleep. He's not sick, but
because Bane releases all like doesn't he release all the inmates?
Yeah, he does. But even before that, something must happen. In the storyline before Nightfall happens, where Batman is starting to get worn down, where Bruce Wayne can't sleep, and he's basically sickly, even though there's nothing particularly wrong with him. And so then Bane breaks everyone out of Arkham, and then Batman has to start fighting all of his villains, one by one, while Bane watches from a distance, and then kind of builds up to the point where he's run through all the gauntlet of all the bad guys, and then Bane takes him on.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if some of those elements translate into. No.
Yeah, I mean,
just judging by trailers and stuff. But it seems like there's the few things I've read, it seems like he does draw on a few of those elements. So that'd be cool. That'd be interesting.
I'm not sure how it's going to work in the movie, and I won't speculate for spoiler purposes. But in the comic book, Bane can tell right away that Bruce Wayne is Batman because he knows him so well. He knows
Obviously, I mean, we're just seeing a trailer. We know that Bane.
Right.
Cool. All right. Mac, finish us off.
Okay. It's a scene that happens in a lot of movies where right at a crucial moment, whether it's in the middle of a chase or something scary or suspenseful is happening, a character will run into the car, get into the car, and the car won't start.
Oh, yeah.
So what are our favorite instances of when the car won't start?
It's a very good one.
Oh.
I feel like I just saw one, too.
Because it's like in every other movie.
Yeah. I just can't... That's never happened to me. Like, my car starts more than it doesn't. And I tend to, drive old cars. People in movies drive nice new cars. Ooh. Okay. Jurassic Park. They're trying to... No, maybe not. Maybe the Jeep did start, but never mind.
Right, no, because they were, like, electric, and they were hooked up to some electric things.
I was the one with the T-Rex chase, but I think they were just waiting for Laura Dern to get her lazy ass on the back of that Jeep.
Oh, that might be true.
They were like turning the key and saying, come on, come on. Okay, how about this? Okay, Back to the Future, right?
Oh, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
Future. Marty just, you know, it's not turning over, and then he hits it, and everything comes flying back on. So another cheap shot at the DeLorean, of course.
You always pick these things that are common, but I can't think of anything. Let's see. Hey, why don't you do yours first, and I'll think about it.
All right. Mine's from kind of the same era from Gremlins. Throughout the entire movie, except they kind of do a reversal on it. Throughout the entire movie, Billy's car never starts. He's always having problems starting the car. It's like this running joke throughout the entire movie. And then at the end, when all hell is breaking loose, and he's running from the Gremlins, he gets into the car, and we in the audience think, oh, no, the car's not going to start, and it starts up just fine for once. And so they pulled a fast one on the audience in that movie.
And I'll throw a bonus while you're still thinking, Eric. It was the episode in Seinfeld where they're wandering around the mall, parking garage, and they finally find their car, and it doesn't start. And that was actually unscripted. So,
really?
A bit of trivia I got from one of the DVDs. Yeah, it's really unscripted. And they say if you look, you could see them all, you know, laughing when Kramer's trying to turn it over. And like Michael Richards ad-libs, he gets out, looks around, gets back in, turns it, nothing happens. So, little serendipity for comedy there.
Man, I am feeling stumped. I'm feeling stupid. Car. It's the car. So the cars, there are cars in movies. And sometimes they won't start. So let's kind of go there. Brainstorm thing. How about, okay. I've never actually seen this movie.
It's okay.
But isn't there a whole thing in Cujo where they get in the car but they can't get away?
Yes.
You know, I want to think so too, because that flashed into my head as well. I think you're, and I have this, the memory of rabid drooling Cujo all over the car. Right?
And I would imagine if
that had been awful.
That's like the whole second hour of the movie is the two of them.
There
trapped
you go.
In the car. Yeah.
Now what is that? So why are they trapped in the car?
The car won't start.
There you go. Okay.
And all right, so. It's hot outside, and Cujo is right outside and won't let them leave.
All right. Whew. Wow.
Nice. You pulled that one out. Excellent.
Feel pretty good about it. Okay.
All right. And with that, we are done with this edition of the Friday Filibuster. So thanks for sticking with us. Enjoy the Dark Knight Rises. Stay tuned for our reaction next week, which I'm sure will be critical and downer. Let's be honest. I'm in the back for this thing already. Yeah. I got to be honest with you. So, yeah. So, anyway. Should be a pretty exciting weekend, so enjoy yours, and Mac, take us away.
Chicks dig the car.